Hey, thank you everybody for tuning in to this weekend's episode of Nevada Backcountry. Man, jam-packed show today, Dave.
Yes, it is. It is, but the biggest thing is what weekend is it?
Oh, it's Memorial Day weekend. Memorial Day coming up tomorrow. So I'm going to wish everybody a happy Memorial Day. And I forewarned you, I'm going to soapbox for a minute.
No, you should. You should, man.
Okay, here's my spiel. For those of you that want to send us a text and remind us that Memorial Day is not a happy day, or if you want to at me, or you're one of the ones posting these memes about, in case you forgot, it wasn't National Barbecue Day, here's my soapbox rant. I got a friend who's buried at Arlington. Been to the gravesite. It's a somber, heavy place. I know the costs. That being said, if he were here today, he'd be getting half drunk and partying like crazy. So for those of you that want to wallow in misery, you're more than welcome to. I'm going to have a few beers and play cornhole on my brand new lawn and celebrate that I got to know such people, work with them, and now I get to reap the benefits of coming out the other side.
Right. Yeah. You got to celebrate it. I mean, there's
100%.
Were some very difficult times in all of that. You know, my grandfather was World War II. My dad was Vietnam and saw some horrible, horrific things. Like you said, it's not a time to wallow in that. It's time to celebrate the triumphs and the sacrifices that got us to the point where we are now today, where we live in the best country in the absolute world.
100%.
Even with all the weird, crazy stuff happening, it's still the best country in the world, and we should celebrate that and thank all of our veterans. So thank you, Henry.
Hey, thanks, Dave. No, I just, every year it seems like, you know, I see the virtue signaling going on around Memorial Day.
Yeah.
Of like, in case you forgot, hey, look, man, I was there the night he died. I haven't forgotten. I'm just not going to hole up in my house and wallow in misery.
Right.
I'm going to enjoy that I'm here.
Celebrate him.
100%.
Yeah, celebrate him, yeah.
So there's my soapbox about Memorial Day. Hey, enjoy the time off work, everybody. Barbecue, drink some beer, enjoy time with your family.
And if you were lucky enough to pull a tag,
bingo,
maybe get out there and practice shooting your weapon.
Yes. Let's go right into that because, man, I do not know what we are going to talk about this fall. I rolled a donut. First time in a long time.
Yeah.
So actually scratch my whole soapbox. Maybe I will wallow in misery. I got nothing. You, on the other hand, you got something good, Dave.
Yeah, I did. I pulled a very nice antelope longer than ears tag. Last year I also drew it, but I turned it in to help a buddy with his California sheep.
Yep.
This year I am not turning it in. This year, I am going to go out with you and several other folks, and we are going to harvest ourselves a very nice antelope.
You're our last best hope, Dave.
Great. Yes. That's fantastic.
The entire season is riding.
And I might, if our muzzle loaders and we start getting those dialed in, I may have to, because it's an any legal weapon season.
Right.
That's the season I wanted because of. I wanted to try it, but I may have to try to squeeze one off with the big old smoke stick.
I would love it. Yeah, I think that would be a cool hunt. I'd love to see that.
Yeah.
Especially with an animal like an antelope.
Yeah, and we'll have to just keep everyone in tune to watch our Instagram and stuff when we start doing the videos of us farting around with these muzzle loaders and seeing what loads work best. Is it dry powder, what bullet, and man, there are so many things that we've learned about muzzleloaders. It's not as simplistic as
it's been an education.
Oh, man. Different plugs, different this, different that. You know, we're looking forward to it. So
A big picture stuff. Real quick, I want to sidebar into the moose tag holders.
Yeah.
So through a friend, I won't say put in touch with, but this friend of ours, a mutual friend, knows one of the tag holders. And without giving too much away, because there's some pressure there, it is a youth hunter. So kudos. That is phenomenal. The other one, he elected to publish on the draw results. Local guy, Well, I say local to where my family is down
Minden-Gardnerville area.
Minden-Gardnerville area. So, hey, congrats to both of those two.
Oh, yeah.
That is going to be an experience.
It really is going to be quite the hunt. And yeah. It's going to be very visual. I mean, there's going to be a lot of people watching it in the sense of wanting updates and how's it going. And same with the Department of Wildlife. They're very well in contact with both of these individuals and are going to monitor the entire hunt process for their purposes.
Right.
So,
and I believe the youth hunter is some Endow folks are going to accompany them on that. Is that's unconfirmed, but that's what I was told.
That one I don't know quite yet. Yeah, okay. That's kind of been some rumor mill going on.
Oh yeah.
In relation to that, because he's a young kid and it's a moose.
Yeah.
It's a moose. So.
I mean, like I said, everything I've heard about them just. Phenomenal kid. So I'm glad that it went to somebody like that.
Yeah.
Despite the fact that I may have cried into my pillow for a little bit when I didn't see my name.
I know, right? Yeah. Well, I had boasted myself so much. I'd throw so much positive energy out there. Like, I'm going to get it. I'll be the one. That when it didn't happen, I was like,
I jinxed myself.
I jinxed myself or I'm going to have to reevaluate this whole positive stuff.
Yeah. It's not worth it. No. hey, so overall, let's talk about not necessarily the granular like draw process, but overall, tag numbers were down, correct?
Well, it depends on the species. For deer, yes.
Okay.
I mean, tag numbers were down considerably for mule deer.
Okay.
In certain areas, all the way up to some areas saw declines of 35%. From last year's quota.
Right.
So, and since deer is pretty much the bulk of the tags in the state across the board for all the animals, yeah, you're going to see a little bit of a decrease. There were increases in some of the elk hunts, antlerless and antlered. There were some increases in antelope. Some of the herds are doing phenomenally well.
Okay.
So I guess it just depends on what animal you were really hoping to get.
I may have been mistaken, but I was texting with a friend of mine and he was kind of lamenting the whole like, hey man, you guys have been talking up this archery thing and muzzleloader thing. I thought there were going to be more tags. And the way I explained it to him was, okay, let's say for all species last year, there were, for sake of argument, 15,000 tags. This year, there might have only been 12,500 total tags. However, a larger percentage went to muzzleloader and archery hunts.
Correct.
Would that be kind of an accurate description? Oh, that's
very accurate. Yeah, okay. Because last year's quota, like you said, may have been 15,000 total tags. So based off of that, if those numbers would have maintained, there would have been a lot more primitive weapon, you know, muzzleloader, archery tags. There were still more archery and muzzleloader tags.
Overall, lower.
A lower number.
Okay.
So you were right.
Explains that. Okay.
Yeah, you explained it very well.
I acted very authoritative in my tone.
Did.
So I kind of ended the argument with him, but I wanted to make sure.
and that was one thing I was watching, you know, on our website and Instagram and stuff was folks were wondering where were all these extra tags. And technically, like you stated, they were there. They were just based on fewer tags actually given out.
Higher percentage, lower overall number.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And when you want to get involved in this kind of stuff, go to the CAB meetings and go to the commissions.
Because
the county CABs were the leading force in decreasing the deer tags. The department had much higher number quotas.
Right.
And the CABs came in and said no. And the commission went with what the CABs wanted this year. You know, that decreased tags quite a bit. A lot of the deer areas.
Okay. I mean,
it's just it's part of the process. It ebbs and flows. It just is what it is.
I've already used my soapbox allocation
know,
for the
I
show.
I saw the look on your face. You were like, you were just like, okay, should I say something or should I pocket this?
I'm going to pocket that one.
You're going to pocket that
one. Yeah, we'll leave that one there.
But overall, the tag process, it went really smoothly. You know, there were some really great sheep tags produced. There's a lot of folks that are really happy online. They're super stoked about their sheep tags and the goat tag. And a lot of folks were wanting more information on the first come, first serve.
Like, oh, I'm glad you brought that up. Yeah.
Like,
yeah.
Like, hey, I got totally skunked. I'm a Henry, man. I got donuts. So.
Oh, no.
So there were folks going like, what's this first come, first serve? I've never had to deal with it before because I've had tags. So right. What is it? How do I get involved in it? How do I sign up for it? You don't sign up for it.
Yeah, I want to get into that. Let's take a break. And when we come back, I got some questions as far as the second draw versus right. First come, first serve. So we'll dive into that after the break here on Nevada Backcountry. Hey, welcome back. Thanks for hanging in there. And if you're just joining us, the show is Nevada Backcountry on 99.1 and 92.3 FM Talk. If you miss an episode or you want to go back and re-listen to something, all of the episodes are archived on 991fmtalk.com. Just click on the podcast tab. And for Apple users out there, we are on Apple Podcasts. So everything's up there. And I've started naming stuff. So no more like 121.23 or whatever. It actually has the label of the show. You can scroll through and go, oh, suppressors, bucket. Yeah, I want to listen to that. Or, oh, it's Dave and Henry talking about rodents. I don't want to listen to that. Whatever you're...
Everyone wants to hear about rodents.
Well, yeah. All right. No. Yeah. Hey, thanks for tuning in. And thank you to Hunt and House Archery Shop for sponsoring it. Look, if you're one of the ones that drew the tag this year, one of those archery tags or primitive class tags, go see Tim, go see Chandler, check out the shop. In fact, my CPA just went down there and he's getting himself a new bow.
What? Really?
Yeah.
Nice. Okay.
It's been a while, but he drew a really coveted bull tag. So Mark Jackson, if you're listening, congrats, buddy.
Oh, man.
But he went down and Tim helped him out. Man, hands-on service, great selection. It is the archery shop to go to in town. We shot just about everything, but he narrowed it down to the Matthews Lift and the Hoyt Alpha. And I think he might have gone, I think, maybe yesterday, but he's going to go with the Hoyt. He liked
that. He's going to go with the Alpha X?
That's what, when I saw him a second ago in the restroom, that's what he said. But
all right.
It was kind of a rushed conversation.
Well, yeah, and it's tough to have a conversation in a bathroom.
In case a third party walks
yeah,
in.
Yeah, it's just like.
Two dudes standing there talking about bows.
Yeah, it's just weird. Just weird.
Yeah.
But no, the Alpha X is a fantastic bow. Not that the Lift isn't. The Lift is
well, that's what really I told him. I said, shoot just, everything they
yeah.
got.
Shoot, what's comfortable to you, man?
Yeah.
You know, if it's not comfortable, it doesn't matter how great of a bow it is. If it's not comfortable in your hand, you can't, what's it matter? You
might yeah. as well, go with what, yeah. you, what you're comfortable with.
Yeah.
So, hey, let's jump back in. Before we went to break, I don't fully understand it, but there is first come, first serve.
Yep.
That we started talking about. And then there's a second draw.
Yes.
Okay, so for everybody listening, if you have a youth hunter at home, I saw the initial like, hey, these are the tags left over as of right now. There are youth primitive class tags for mule deer left over. I can't remember the units off the top of my head, but go check it out. How does that work?
You know, whoever wants to now will start applying for the second draw, whatever's remaining.
They said May 29th, I think, they'll have the final count of what's left over.
Right. And then you'll apply for it, and it's a super quick turnaround.
Okay.
You know, and then they'll draw, and then they'll get rid of those tags. And if there's anything left after that, then, if I remember correctly, it can go into a over-the-counter. You just come in and purchase one.
So you're telling me there's a chance?
There's a chance.
I might.
There's okay. a chance. Have to identify as a 14-year-old kid. You can get any. You can probably get a great primitive weapon.
Perfect.
Tag.
I right. can do that.
Right.
Anybody that listens to the show knows I play the idiot 14-year-old very well.
Yeah.
So when I saw the initial list, I mean, it was moments, or it was within moments of the draw ending. So
right.
is that those tags were just not applied for?
Well, yeah, they just probably didn't have enough people in those classes. So,
oh,
you know, in years
okay.
past, there would be, I'm just going to throw a number out there because I don't know exactly.
Yeah, hypothetical.
So a hypothetical of 800 tags in Area 10, mm-hmm. but you only have 700 people that put in for Area 10.
There'd be 100 left
right.
over.
You gotcha. Know, and you got to remember, people put in for Area 10 for their fifth choice, but they pull their second choice, so now they're out.
Okay.
You see what I'm saying?
So, yeah.
So you end up with more tags than people that got them.
Okay.
By the time the draw's done and over with, these tags did not get distributed. So then you go into the second draw with those the ones that weren't distributed. So
now, what about like if, let's say, a wife sees the credit card statement and goes, oh, hell no, I'm putting my foot down.
You're not going on four hunts this
yeah,
year.
Yeah, so the turned in, is that why there's a period between, so like this year they drew on the 17th, but by the 29th, they'll have the finalized list together. That's like a early turn-in period or something?
Well, no, not those. The second draw does not have any of the turned-in tags.
It is strictly leftover.
It's strictly leftover tags.
Okay.
So what happens from there is anyone that turns in a tag. So, again, hypothetically, someone turns in a 17 archery deer tag.
Right.
First thing that the Calcomi does, the alternates list. Okay, and they go down the alternates list.
Right, and I am an alternate.
You are an alternate, so you may get a phone call and say, hey, somebody turned in the tag. You want it, and you can say yay or nay. Somebody says no, then they're pulled off the list.
I ignore numbers I don't know, though, Dave.
Yeah, well, you better start answering them.
Okay.
They better start answering them.
Okay.
So, yeah, so if they call you and say, hey, this tag's available, you're an alternate, do you want it? And if you say no, you get pulled off the list.
They won't email you. It's just a call.
I have never been chosen as an alternate, but I think there is a call, but there's also an email because they got you on the email as well.
Okay.
So they're going to contact you in any way, shape, or form to give you a chance to yay or nay it.
Right.
You know, and I don't know if there's a time period of like, you know, they give you 24 hours, right, 48 hours right. or something, and then they move on. But once all the alternates are gone off mm-hmm. of that list, and someone else turns in a tag, then that becomes a first-come, first-serve tag.
Oh, gotcha.
So people turning in tags right now that you're seeing online, like, hey, man, I got too many tags. I'm going to turn in my deer tag. I'm keeping the bull tag. And so they'll go to the alternates list for that turned-in tag. Once the alternates list is depleted, then that becomes a first-come, first-serve tag.
Okay, now I've got a real-world example for you on the first-come, first-serve thing.
All right.
Before he drew an 068, my dad drew a California bighorn sheep tag year before or a couple years before, and it was in a unit that was getting hit with pneumonia pretty bad. We okay. went out, and we scouted our asses off, looked all over that unit, did not turn up anything of quality for sure. And it came down to literally, it was like the weekend before the hunt. We hemmed and hawed, and there was the whole back and forth over, hey, this is a California sheep tag. Do we just hunt it out? I don't know what I'm going to do. It came down to like right before the deadline, he turned it in. Would that pop up on a first come, first serve so close to the hunt start?
It would, yeah. Again, if there wasn't an alternate, if you didn't put yourself down as an alternate,
right.
You know, not a lot of sheep tags are turned in.
Right.
I mean, they are. Every year we have a few, you know, Department of Wildlife has a few, but they'll go to the alternates list. So Joe
gotcha.
Schmo or Sally Smith, like, hey, they're the alternate for this California tag. Contact them. If they want it that close, you know, sometimes it's like, well, I'm not ready for that.
Yeah.
Not ready for it. So then it'll pop into first come, first serve.
Okay.
But that alternate list has to be depleted first.
Okay. Thank God he drew the 068 a couple years later, or maybe
yeah.
it was a year later. Because
it was 2 years ago.
Well, his 068 was the one he had before that he turned in. I forget if it was a year before, whatever it was.
Gotcha.
But man, I know there was some hand wringing over that. Like, holy
oh, yeah.
crap, I could turn this in and never see another one. What do I do? But we talked to the biologist for that area, and he said, hey, look, I hate to tell you what to do with this. It's a, you know, phenomenal tag, but here's what's going on in that unit.
Yeah.
And
I had a few friends the year that I had my desert tag, they had desert tags, any legal weapon tags in other areas, and both of them One of them decided to push it out and just go for it. The other one turned his tag in because he had scouted something like 14 days and saw nothing. It was one of the desert areas that had been hit really hard with pneumonia.
Yeah.
And just nuked a bunch of them. So he turned his in. The other buddy was like, nope.
I don't think I'm ever
going to get this tag again. I'm just going to grind it out. And he was out there all but 3 days of the season. Never saw a ram.
Ooh, went unfilled, huh?
Went unfilled.
Ouch. Ouch.
So that's a brutal one.
Well, shoot, coming up on the show, next couple segments, I had a recent experience with an owl at my house.
Yeah, you did.
We'll talk about owls a little bit and then maybe delve into some bat stuff because you are the bat guy. and that's not a comment on your mental status. Oh, but
yeah. Sure.
So, hey, don't go anywhere. More Nevada backcountry coming up right after the break. Man, we were just both yawning over the break there. I told Dave to knock it off. It's not that the topics aren't exciting. I don't know. What's your excuse? Why are you yawning, Dave?
This room's hot.
Yeah, this room is hot.
Yeah.
Hey, if anybody listening knows anybody at Nevada Commercial Services, service is a misnomer. I hate them. They're the worst commercial property management company in Reno. They pulled the AC out of the back half of the office complex, which is exactly where the production room is that we record in.
Yeah.
If you know anybody that works there, can you guys lean on them for me? Because I'm fed up, man. They're garbage. So anyway, there's that. Now, hey, thank you to Legacy Sports International for sponsoring the show. If you want a rifle that's not garbage and Nevada Commercial Services doesn't have their fingerprints on, get a Howa Super Light. There's now a Howa Super Light 4.3 pounds. The groups guys are getting out of them, running them suppressed are absolutely incredible. But big thank you to Legacy Sports International for sponsoring the show. Let's dive
super
into
Super Light.
I don't know what it's called, so I went with Super Light. It's a short barrel version.
It's like Dumb and Dumber.
Well, that's a new name of the show. Yeah.
Yeah.
It's not. No.
Okay.
Hey, so owls in the state of Nevada.
Yes.
You came and grabbed an owl for my house.
I did. Yes.
Big thank you.
You're very welcome. Yeah. It's owl season, I guess you could call it.
Yep.
A lot of the young are starting to fledge out, you know, out of the nests. The urban areas are becoming very wildlife friendly. A lot of wildlife are becoming
accustomed to
being around houses and buildings, and they're learning how to adapt to it all. Birds are putting nests in some of the craziest places.
Yeah.
And they're doing very well, as well as bats and several other small mammals, you know, raccoons and skunks and possums and all kinds of crazy things. So they've become very accustomed. So now
we have, hold on, back up now. You just dropped one on me. We have possums?
Yes.
I've never seen one.
Yeah, they're kind of elusive little dogs.
Yeah, they are.
Yeah.
Stinky sons of guns, man.
They really are. They really are. But they're super cool just to, you know, get back and kind of watch them. And
dude, that is one of the ugliest critters.
A possum?
Yes. We used to have them back in the southeast, man. They're, yeah like cockroaches.
Yeah.
They're just foul looking things.
When I was in a chunk of my education in Chicago, my first experience was coming out of my apartment and had a possum right at my door. Just absolutely
freaks you out.
Oh man, I had to go back in and change my pants.
What yeah.
in the heck is that thing? And you know,
it was a possum.
You know, biology graduate, and I'm like, what's that?
Somebody get a broom and beat this thing.
No. Yeah. But anyway, so they're becoming very accustomed to it. And when owls, raptors, when they fledge out of the nest, they don't know how to fly.
Right.
So generally they will do the best they can to try to figure out how to fly and like coast. And they'll generally, you know, come down onto the ground, somebody's front yard, backyard, driveway, what have you, school. Those are awesome when they land in a schoolyard. But they, you know, they get down there and they start stretching their wings or trying to, you know, like do a little yoga stuff and trying to get the muscles activated and so that they can actually figure out how to do it. It's kind of like teaching your kid the first couple times on a bicycle, cupping that back of that seat, like, okay,
Do I let go? Yeah. Do I not let go?
How do I do this?
Is my insurance premium paid up?
You know, and you know, most of the time they end up eating it a couple times.
Ooh,
but
yeah.
Okay. In your case, yeah, it came out and landed in your backyard. And
well, we think landed. So I'll tell the story real quick. Crash landed, because it was wounded, you said.
Yes, it was.
I was up doing work stuff at a transmitter site. There was a big windstorm. This was last weekend. We think it blew out of a neighbor's tree and crash landed in our yard, but it was a great horned owl.
Yeah, juvenile great horn.
Oh, it was so cool. But anyway, my wife being my wife and having a soft spot for all this stuff, she went out bravely with a towel, threw the towel on the thing. When she realized it was kind of hopping funny and she knew, like, hey, this thing's not going to fly off. And our neighborhood is not the neighborhood to be a wounded bird on the ground in. So anyway, she puts it in the garage. I get home from work. I'm going, what the hell? Why do I have an owl in my garage? So I sent you a text. Oh, because that was what she told me. Dave knows about it.
I love that response.
Yeah, Dave knows about it. And it's like, I don't care if Dave knows about it, man. Like, there's an owl in my garage. I mean, it was the coolest bird.
They are. They're so
human-like,
so cool.
Eyes. I mean, yeah. Awesome-looking thing.
And just their coloration, their plumage, absolutely beautiful birds. And your kids named it
Trevor.
Trevor.
I don't think they've ever met a Trevor, yeah. But Trevor was the moniker that stuck.
Yeah, it did. And you know, after I picked him up and took him over to the lab, cleaned him up real good and got him all tidied up.
Yeah.
And sent him off to rehab, he started looking like a Trevor.
Yeah, he's just stuck.
It just stuck. I was like, hey, you know, driving along, I'm like, hey, what's up, Trevor? And he's just sitting in the passenger side, just clacking.
Hey, let me ask you about that real quick.
Yeah.
What are they doing when they do that?
They're basically telling you you're too close.
Oh.
Like, you know, space. Give me some space, man.
I mean, I got my hand out of there quick when he started doing that. For those of you that haven't been up close and personal with an owl, man, the sound of those two beaks clacking together.
It's wicked.
Oh, I knew right away. I was like, I'm getting my fingers out of here. Yeah. But was he just kind of in a dazed state when I was giving him, because I was giving him water with a pipette, and jury's still out on that. I don't know. One person told us, don't give it any food or water. And I'm like, man, the darn thing's in a box. He's hot. Like, I'm going to give him some water.
Food's a tough one to provide to them. You know, they can go quite some time without having any food.
Okay.
You know, so you're solid there. Water, on the other hand, it's hydration. When they're stressing out like that, and Trevor was definitely stressing. That's one reason why I told the wife to maybe give him a little bit of water. Don't flood the poor fella, but you know, if you got something, you can just get a couple drops in the mouth and just kind of give it a little bit. Hydration's really important, because if they start stressing out too much and there's a long period of time between pickup and setup and then getting them to a rehab facility and then acclimation to that rehab facility, they can dehydrate, and they start to dehydrate, and sometimes that's all it takes, and then you lose them.
Well, I know if I had a busted wing, somebody threw a towel on me, stuffed me in a box, the least they could do for me is give me a little water.
Yeah, and to see your face when you open the box and to see Henry staring at you, like, oh, man, what did I do to deserve this?
This is no good.
Yeah.
Here's the weird thing, though. I would give him the pipette with water, and he was cool. He would drink. But then it was like I would go back to give him a couple more drops, and he just decided he was done.
Yeah.
And he started clacking at me. And luckily, I've been around enough wild animals. I knew, like, you know, that doesn't look like an affectionate response. Yeah. I'm going to get my hand out of there. So anyway, hey, great horned owls.
Yeah.
Very cool. What other owls do we have in the state?
Man, we've got some cool ones. We have screech owls, which are screech and flammulated owls are about as big as your palm. Just little
fully
guys.
Grown?
Fully grown. Flammulated are probably my favorite. Then you get into the barn owls. You got the great horned owls. You got the short-eared owls. Short-eared owls are really cool. You'll see them out in, like, meadows.
Okay.
Kind of cruising over habitat, the shrubbery. And they'll dive bomb, like, rodents and stuff. They're, like, little
daytime stuff, though.
Yeah. Yeah, you'll see them cruising around, yeah, because they're hunting and stuff, and they'll generally
be in pairs.
We see
them come out at dusk, and yeah. I know I've seen a barn owl at our place. I've seen great horned owls. I don't see them during the day.
You know, screech owls and flammulated owls, you're not going to see. They pretty much, they're in forested areas.
Okay.
And their plumage looks just like bark.
Oh, cool.
So there have been several times I've been up in the Tahoe Basin and in Peavine and stuff, and I'll be doing some survey work. And every blue moon, you know, I'll be working near a tree or up, and I'll hear something, and I'll look up, and there's a flammulated owl 5 feet from me, just kind of...
Flammulated?
Flammulated owl. Look, okay. Check them out. And then it'll just turn its head, and it's just staring at me with those... like super human
eyes,
Google
man.
Eyes. It's a cool feeling. It's like,
don't bite me.
Yeah. Oh, they're fairly harmless. And when we do surveys for them, sometimes we'll mouse them. And what that is once you start getting signal, you know, that they're hooting or that they're in the area, you know, you'll get a white mouse from the pet store and you let it go in an open area and,
They'll come
down. Your big old white mouse, man. It's not going to last long out there. And
so hang on, back up. So you go to like Petco and you're checking out with a bag. Hey, I only want the white ones. You got your bag of mice. What is it?
Well, they're called feeder mice.
They know the deal.
Yeah. I mean, they're there for snakes and owls and, you know, for feeding, like lizards.
So the poor girl with like blue hair and a nose ring and says, oh, have you named them yet? You guys aren't like, no, we're feeding them to owls.
Right.
Okay.
No, we're pretty strict.
Yeah.
These are right. Owls. But yeah, flammulated owls.
Hey, let's go to break. And then when we come back, maybe wrap up on the owl thing, raptor stuff. And then we'll get into bats a little bit.
Yeah.
All right. Don't go anywhere, everybody. The show is Nevada Backcountry on 99.1 and 92.3 FM Talk. Truck Envy in Reno, camper shells, suspension, lift, leveling kits, you name it. They've got everything for your summer of fun on the road. Take your truck down, see Andy and the guys at Truck Envy, and sincere thanks for sponsoring the show. We left off chatting about owls there.
And again, like we were stating before, an urban wildlife is what we're calling it. You know,
yes.
Urban wildlife. And they've just become so well adapted to living in an urban environment that every year more and more phone calls come in relation to, you know, raptors nesting in trees and in neighborhoods, owls, coyotes are becoming a big issue, raccoons, skunks, you know, all kinds of stuff because we provide such a great resource for them.
Right. I mean,
we provide them shelter. People leaving their garbage out for 2 days. We're providing them with food. We've got cats. People own those little small bait dogs. They're wild animals. This is what they do. Another one that we're starting to see a lot of that I get phone calls on is the ermine or long-tailed weasels.
Oh, you know, where at?
All over the place.
Seriously?
They're all over the city of Reno. And getting phone calls like, hey, I think somebody lost their ferret. It's in my front yard. And like, nope, it's part of the ferret family, but that's not a ferret. It's a long-tailed weasel or it's an ermine. So yeah, we get a lot of stuff in relation to that. And I'm sure a lot of you out there listening, you probably have encountered some of this. The swallows, the swallows that are putting up the clay nests on
people's... They love
people's,
stucco houses.
Oh, man. Side of stucco houses, side of buildings, really deep eaves. If you got like really big deep eaves or a big overhang on the house or shed or garage, they'll pack in there, especially if it's on the shaded side.
Go back to raptors for a second because over the break we were chatting about this. I didn't know this. PSA for everybody listening. If you have a raptor, it's all raptors, owls, if they're on a nest with eggs,
it becomes
a federal issue.
Correct. Yeah, they are federally protected. If there isn't anything in the nest, like say we're out of the breeding season, it's October.
Right.
And you're like, you know,
I want to cut that tree down.
Right. I want to cut that tree down. All the leaves are gone. It's, you know, if there's nothing in the nest, it's considered not active, and you can remove the nest, take it out of the tree, or if your plan is to cut the tree down, then you can cut the tree down. But from pretty much April until they fledge, which is generally in mid to late July, you can't touch them. And that's not just the state of Nevada. That is federal. That is the Migratory Bird Treaty Act.
Oh.
So you think that you can do it just because it's your own personal property and I can do what I want type of a thing. If it's witnessed and somebody rats you out or something, the fines are huge.
Yeah, you huge. Gave an example. We don't have to go into the story, but you said somebody got hit with like $25,000.
Yeah. So it can, and it they can go bigger.
Okay, so hey, I'll throw myself out there. In our situation where you got a crippled up one in the yard, you're worried about it getting eaten.
Right.
I'm assuming we did the right thing.
Oh, you did. No,
like,
no, no.
Okay.
Yeah, that's exactly, you know, that's why urban wildlife and biologists will come out and retrieve that.
Gotcha.
At a certain point in time, things can become public safety issues. So in an instance where you have a raptor through that swooping down at people in their yard, swooping down, coming down at them, coming down after their dog, you know, because they've got, you know, little lopsa opsos or they become public safety issues.
Okay.
So then that kind of goes into a whole different category of, okay, something does need to be done here.
Gotcha.
So then that's a whole different.
Okay, so I run a chainsaw pretty regularly, cutting down stuff at my house. Now I guess I know I need to give the trunk a couple swift kicks and make sure there's nothing up there that's going to get me run afoul of the law. I was going to go into bats, but I'm looking at the time. I'm going to totally switch gears on you here. I wanted to wrap up on something that's impacting Nevada's wildlife.
Yeah.
And you've been doing a little research on it for me. We don't have everything yet. We're not going to dive too deep. Green energy projects in the state of Nevada, they ain't so green. And especially when it deals with impacting migration corridors, impacting big game. And look, if anybody wants to take me a task on this, I'm not saying big oil is like the savior. I'm just saying, you know, sometimes these green energy projects get rammed down our throats because they're at a federal level.
Right.
And essentially, as Nevadans, we have no say in the matter, and our state agencies don't have a lot of say in the matter.
Yeah, because Nevada is probably the largest federally owned state in the union. So.
Right, which is why I love it. It's got the most public land.
It has
land.
The most public land. I mean, that's how we ended up with Yucca Mountain. I mean, it's
the old
federal chunk of land. So, and same thing's going now with a lot of the solar and renewable energy, geothermal, wind energy, and even lithium, which isn't renewable.
Right.
You know, that's one of those questions like, what is renewable?
Like,
what truly is renewable? Oil, natural gas, those types of things, they're replenishing that stock constantly.
Right.
It's constantly occurring and it's constantly making more. Technically, is that renewable?
Yeah.
To a sense, it is.
Right.
But anyway, that's a whole nother tangent.
I was going to point out the electric vehicle batteries and just how destructive that stuff is.
The whole, if you look into the lithium mining and you look at a lithium mining complex compared to, say, an oil rig.
Or an oil pipeline.
It's hugely different. The lithium facilities, when they're in there mining, they don't just take lithium. They're in there to make money. So they're going to take everything that they can sell, any type of mineral that's in the soil that they can make money on.
Yeah.
So they're stripping that entire soil for everything it's got. The processes in which they extract it are
extremely toxic.
Yeah, very bad. And it just neutralizes the soil. Some of these places, there's nothing growing on them 20, 30, 40 years later.
Right.
It's Mars. And these are taking up tens of thousands, in some cases, hundreds of thousands of acres of land that they're just, you know, really putting a hurting on, which is wildlife habitat. It's all gone.
Yeah.
It's not coming back. You know, some of these corridors, these migration corridors that have been around for hundreds of years for these animals, it's not like, well, they'll just go around us. Sometimes that's not how it works.
The big one in Nevada right now is there are so many solar projects. I mean, we're pretty much I'm not going to say treeless because obviously we got our timbered mountain ranges. But for the most part, the valleys, I mean, you're talking about the, how do I say this without, it's like the ideal environment for sun, right? to put a solar farm. However, they ram this stuff down our throats under the guise of green renewable energy. And the bottom line is there is going to be a pretty dramatic effect on some of Nevada's big game herds.
Yeah, not only just big game, but we're talking small mammals. You're talking your, you know, lizards. You're talking reptiles. Anything that uses that land is affected, not just big game. Thousands and thousands, tens of thousands, hundreds of thousands of birds die a year, and bats.
Yeah.
And then on the big game side, you know, a lot of these facilities require a great deal of water, so you're depleting the watersheds.
Oh, for cooling stuff?
For cooling, okay. For some of the cooling ponds and stuff. You're eliminating some of their wintering habitat because some of these big meadows where they're putting these facilities, that's where the deer and the antelope and some elk and stuff would come for wintering. It's gone. And, you know, a lot of these solar complexes are fenced off. Even they got high fence so that they don't have animals running around. There's a more detrimental things to wildlife than good.
Anybody that knows me would never mistake me as a tree hugger, but I don't want to use the word environmentalist, but hunting is my passion. It's what I love to do. And stuff that interferes with that, yeah, I'm going to speak up. I'm going to put my foot down and I'm going to say this is absolutely not right. And I don't think it's right that state agencies essentially are being ignored in this, as the case with some of these solar projects, and the federal government, so that the current geriatric sitting on the throne can have another bullet point next to his tenure and say, hey, well, I increased green energy, da 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 da. And it's like, look, man, this is bad for Nevada and bad for Nevada's wildlife. If you are one of the ones driving a Prius, you know, and you think you're saving the planet, this, that, and the other thing, I got news for you. Green energy ain't so green. Quit your virtue signaling. Turn in the Tesla. Go get a Dodge diesel. Come on, man. All right. Well, hey, I don't want to.
It was a good article.
I hate that stuff. And I hate big city politicians and their spit shine shoes and, you know, wouldn't know what end of a rifle to point at an animal. Man, don't tell me what's best for the wilderness in Nevada. Hey, tomorrow's Memorial Day. Everybody enjoy it. Spend time with your families. Sincerely, everybody, thank you for tuning in. And coming up next, celebrate with a little Tom Gresham on Gun Talk.